It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
March 2020, the Tiger King docuseries explodes on Netflix. 34 million people watch the show in the first 10 days of its release. The show receives an 89% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. America couldn't get enough of Joe Exotic, Jeff Lowe, and of course the beautiful and majestic Tigers. We thought they hated Carol Baskin, but they loved and cared for the animals. They didn't. This is the moving story of how the federal government rescued over 67 tigers and sent them to sanctuaries around the country. Join us. Boy, I was no exception. I was absolutely glued to the Tiger King. But that was then. Knowing what I've learned from researching the story, I gotta tell you, I'm just disgusted and I'm outraged. Turns out they weren't united in their love for tigers. What we didn't know was they exploited and abused them. Many of the tigers were suffering and in great pain. Some had to be euthanized, but we'll get to all that. The group we have today, I just say thank goodness for them. They did a good thing. They led the effort to rescue over 65 tigers that were in possession of Joe Exotic's associates, Jeff and Lauren Lowe. It wasn't easy, but this was part of the group that got it done. I'm Chris Gotsick. This is Chasing Evil. We start with Mary Hollingsworth, a senior trial attorney with the Department of Justice's Environment and Natural Resources Division, and they enforce the Endangered Species Act, which we'll be learning a lot about later. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, Chris.
Jenny Crane, who you've heard about before, who helped dismantle the Madoff fortune, and she could sell sunshine in Hawaii. She is the top salesperson for the U.S. Marshals Office. She is the assistant chief of the Asset Forfeiture Division. Welcome, Jenny.
Hey.
Pat Craig, founder and executive director of the Wild Animal Sanctuary, an incredible 33,000-acre facility in Colorado that, among other things, provides a fantastic home for rescued tigers. Dr. Valerie Johnson, a 25-year veterinarian specializing in critical care. She works with the Animal Sanctuary. She's also an assistant professor at Michigan State University and does things with stem cells and all kinds of research. A real underachiever. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I'll try to up my game.
And Sean Shoreb, who is a retired assistant chief inspector with the U.S. Marshals Service, spent 20 years with them in Oklahoma City. Welcome, Sean, and congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
Well, let's get into this story. It is a complicated story that we're going to try to make as palatable as possible. But there was a lot of legal wrangling to get to the point where the government was able to rescue these animals. So we're going to start with Mary. So Mary, tell us where this story kind of really begins.
So in Wynnewood, Oklahoma, there was this facility that was run by Joe Maldonado, who is also known as Joe Exotic.
Right.
It's called the Greater Wynnewood Exotic Animal Park. And he had, depending on the time, 100 to 200 different animals there, many of which were big cats, such as lions, tigers, and crosses of the two. And he was an exhibitor licensed by USDA. Mm-hmm. And at some point around 2016 or so, Jeff Lowe and Lauren Lowe join him at this property. Jeff Lowe had been licensed individually with his own small set of big cats. I think he started off in South Carolina and tried a venture in Colorado, made his way to Oklahoma. And so they decide to sort of join forces. And then Joe Exotic, as I think we all now know, ran into some legal trouble and ends up getting arrested for the murder for hire plot plus violations of the Endangered Species Act. And he basically hands over this zoo and all of the animals to Jeff Lowe to manage.
Uh-huh. Because he's going to jail for 20 years.
That's right.
Yes.
So Jeff Lowe and Lauren Lowe, who, you know, Jeff, I think, you know, he's previously had maybe like a dozen cats, maybe 20 or so. He's now in charge of a zoo of like 200 animals, way beyond anything he's managed before. As part of his license, and in order to continue to exhibit under his license, USDA does unannounced inspections of the property. Mm-hmm. And in June of 2020, a team of inspectors go out to the property and they notice a number of issues. And in particular, they notice a lion named Nala, who is laying in mud, basically, and is not moving. She's not getting up, moving around, engaging in sort of normal behaviors. And the inspector, there was actually a veterinarian on the inspection team. They stop the inspection right away, and they say, you have to get this cat, this lion, mm-hmm. medical care right now. He agrees to take this lion cub, who initially they thought was only a few months old because she was so small. She actually, I think, ended up being closer to about 10 months of age. But they take him to the vet. Now, one of the major problems with this facility is that, you know, under the Animal Welfare Act, you're required to have an attending vet. Mm-hmm. And an attending vet is supposed to, under the law, have training or experience in the animals being attended to, which makes sense, right? You don't want a cat dog vet taking care of, you know, bears. You want somebody who, you know, at least has had on the job experience taking care of the animals.
You want Valerie Johnson.
Right. So not only do they not have an attending vet, they are going on a case-by-case basis to a veterinarian who is doing her absolute best.
Right.
I think I think she was really trying, but she's a small pet veterinarian and just simply didn't have the experience. And so, as it turns out, Nala has a vitamin A deficiency. I think her levels, you know, they're supposed to be at 90 milligrams. It was 0.1. So if that tells you...
Yeah. Valerie, how does a tiger have a vitamin deficiency like that?
It's actually very common in hand-raised cubs who are not allowed to nurse from their mother or pulled from the mother right when they're born. The milk that replacer that they tend to use is not appropriate for big cats. and quite often, these animals end up with a vitamin A deficiency. And now in lions with a vitamin A deficiency, it's a well-known syndrome from people who don't know what they're doing. And it causes, during development, a malformation of the skull. And so because of that, these animals have neurologic problems for life and also can die, like this cub who is in such bad shape.
Uh-huh. And so, again, something that will be a reoccurring theme as we talk about this is a lot of the things that the Lowe's cats experienced was easily preventable.
Correct.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Which just to me just makes the crime just that much heinous.
I think what it is it's the ego, right? They, you know, yes, he is Jeff Lowe and, you know, Joe Exotic, you know, they've had cats for years. Mm-hmm. And so they fancy themselves as experts, but they can't even provide like the most basic care, including nutrition, to these animals.
Right.
And they're so focused on sort of making money off the cubs. So we have to remove them from mom. So they're not getting the nutrients right away. So they're ending up with these really sort of extremely painful.
Right.
conditions.
And Pat, I don't know if this is something you know a lot about. How do they make money off the Cubs?
Yeah, so Jeff Flo and Joe Exotic and many others that were in that Tiger King special realized at one point that the money was really in the Cubs. They realized that people would pay a lot of money to be able to hold a tiger cub or a lion cub. And so they were, you know, breeding tons of babies every year, and they could make anywhere from, you know, $2,000 to $10,000 per cub by charging people to come in big groups and hold these cubs and pass them around. And so really that was a big change in their whole operating scheme, was when they realized the money was there versus, you know, just a zoo, a roadside zoo or anything else.
Right. And can you take a tiger away from its mother and then bring it back? Or does that disrupt the relationship where potentially the mother rejects the cub?
No, absolutely. They take them almost at birth, within a few days of birth, and they don't give them back, even because they don't want to. But even that would be almost impossible. Wild animals, even though they're born in captivity, have this instinct to kind of abandon it. Once a cub's gone, you know, they feel like it's gone forever. And so trying to bring it back never works. And that really wasn't in interest to them. They just wanted to use the cubs and then try to sell them or give them away to somebody else once they were too big to play with anymore.
There's nothing illegal about that, right?
In general, there's nothing illegal with breeding lions and tigers in captivity if you're licensed, and then subsequently, you know, doing something else with those cubs once they're not of use to you anymore.
Right.
So that was part of the problem, was it wasn't an illegal act until they did something else.
I mean, we would say it's illegal to separate cubs. It's a violation of the Endangered Species Act.
Uh-huh.
But many of these exhibitors were doing it.
So Mary, what happened with Nala?
So actually, she was taken to a veterinarian through a very complicated set of sort of legal procedures. Nala is actually living her best life at Pat's facility.
Oh, fantastic. And how is she doing, Pat?
She's doing great now. She's full grown, and she came so close to death at one point there with the inspectors that were there, that even though they took her to a vet, the inspector was convinced that she had died. And so when they finally came to the facility here on another mission, they asked about it and said, well, she died. I said, no, she's actually alive. She made it. So thankfully, the inspector did intervene, and that saved her. Obviously, there was a long road to recovery for her, but today she's living a great life.
Mm-hmm. Great. So there was the inspection. It didn't obviously go well.
So at this inspection, I want to point out a couple other things.
Okay.
Because so first, obviously, they see Nala, it's so obvious that she's in need of veterinary care. They also realize that he doesn't have an attending vet, which, as I mentioned, is sort of a critical component of the Animal
Sure.
Welfare Act, having a knowledgeable vet who can actually, can recognize issues with the animals. Also, what we kind of find with bad actors in this world is they always have terrible paperwork. So they're always missing animals, animals who sort of seem to have come from nowhere or out of nowhere, and, you know, dozens of missing animals. So at this point in June, the inspectors are they're seeing this trend, and they're tracking the missing animals, and they want to know where they are, and he's not providing paperwork. So that's an issue.
Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s and play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. The thrill is endless, with new chapters added weekly, allowing you to not only enjoy the detective adventure, but also to personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
When animals are missing, is the natural thing to think that they died?
Personally, I would think that they died, or they went to somebody that they weren't supposed to go to. Maybe somebody who isn't licensed, or there's some other thing going on.
Right.
But to me, you know, I know it seems sort of mundane, these paperwork issues, but I actually think they're very critical to ensuring that these animals are getting the care that they need. And another thing that they're seeing on this visit is there's actually like a burn pile and there's a dead cat in there that's like not, that wasn't properly disposed of. They asked for medical records. It turns out that this cat had not gotten proper medical care. Again, as sort of Pat pointed out, another cat who's been bred over and over again without proper care. And she had just died, I think, in the previous few weeks. So, you know, anytime USDA inspectors see a serious problem at a facility, a serious violation, they typically go back within a couple weeks to do a focused inspection to check on those serious violations to ensure that that the facility has come into compliance and they fix that issue. Right. So they return on July 8th, just a couple weeks later, and there are essentially no improvements. There is now another cub named Aisha, who, I mean, her story, it was gut-wrenching. Again, another cub who was prematurely separated from mom, has metabolic bone disease, fractures. She wasn't sort of moving well, but supposedly was getting veterinary care.
Okay, I'll put a pin in 1 second. Metabolic bone disease, Valerie, what is that?
Yeah, so metabolic bone disease is, again, a nutritional condition that comes from inadequate nutrition to growing animals. And what happens is they don't have enough, usually calcium in this case, for their bones to form properly. And because of that, the bones don't calcify and they become bendy. And then one of two things can happen. They can either become bowed for life so that they, you know, if you provide them proper nutrition, they often have, you know, abnormalities for their whole lives causing painful arthritis, or the bones just break because they're too soft, especially in a big cat.
Okay.
So we often will see these animals with metabolic bone disease that just have multiple fractures everywhere and are much pain.
Okay.
And the reason, I'm sure you would agree with me on this, but the reason is typically what they're providing is food, is boneless chicken.
Correct.
It's cheap. And without the proper supplements, so, you know, without sort of adding certain components beyond just this boneless chicken, it's just not enough for their bones to develop properly.
Right. That's right, Mary. Almost all the time when we see metabolic bone disease, it's because these animals have been fed nothing but boneless meat. And in the wild, they eat the bones and they get the calcium and phosphorus that way. Now, as you said, if you provide the appropriate supplements, you can go without feeding whole bones, but they have to get that from somewhere. And they just weren't knowledgeable enough to know what the appropriate diet was for a young animal.
Okay. All right, Mary, back to you.
Yeah. So in addition to just, you know, the diet itself being inappropriate, what the inspectors see on July 8th, in addition, is like, you know, they smell like the smell of like rotting meat. And it turns out the refrigeration truck that the Lowe's were using to store the meat that they were giving to the animals to eat, the refrigeration system has failed. And it's like 84 degrees in the truck. And it's all like all of the meat in there is rotting.
Right.
And this is their only way to maintain the food that they're supposed to be giving.
And Pat, will tigers eat rotting food?
Only if they're dying. I mean, even then there's a limit to what they would eat. So, you know, I witnessed that truck and the condition of the meat. There's no way that any of those carnivores would have eaten that.
So it has to be fresh for them.
Obviously fresh is great. Obviously they'll come up to, in the wild, would come up to a carcass and eat on it, but there's limits to what they would eat.
Okay.
In addition, when they opened the door to that truck, piles of rotting meat and maggots came flowing out. It was nothing that you could expect anyone to eat, and you probably would have gotten very ill had you eaten it.
Okay. So this next inspection is worse than the first one.
Right. I mean, it's certainly no better. And again, they're asking for paperwork. We've got missing animals, and there really isn't any improvement.
Right.
So, you know, at that point, and again, I wasn't involved quite yet, but typically what would happen is the inspectors are flagging for their management and upward, and they're having a discussion about what to do next. And around August 14th, so again, you know, about a month later, USDA takes the step of suspending Jeff Lowe's license. Now, a suspension can only last 21 days. That's the way it's written in the law. But it does prevent a licensee from either moving animals, selling them, exhibiting them, basically engaging in regulated activity right. for that period of time. And the point of that is both to say, hey, you know, you need to get your act together. You've got to come right. into compliance. And it's also to give them the space to come into compliance.
Right. But this is 2 months after Tiger King has aired. So the popularity and the interest in his cats must be skyrocketing.
Probably. Yes.
Right.
So
you would think he would want to get in compliance to capitalize on all this newfound publicity.
True. One would think, but that also costs money, and you have to also be interested in caring for your animals.
Right.
So
fair.
Right about that time, I reach out to the Office of General Counsel for USDA, and my boss and I have had this discussion. We've looked at the statute, and we're like, what is this sort of weird provision about serious danger? And basically, it allows the agency, so if USDA has reason to believe that any animal is the health of any animal is being placed in serious danger, then the agency is supposed to contact the Department of Justice, and then the Department of Justice may file an emergency motion in court to try to, you know, basically help the animals that are in serious danger and prevent the licensee from, again, operating until they come into compliance.
Right.
Oddly enough, the provision had never been enforced. It had never been used.
Wait. Pin. Let's just put a pin in that for a second. You're telling me this is as part of the Endangered Species Act.
So Animal Welfare Act.
Okay. So this is part of the Animal Welfare Act. And there's a serious danger to an animal. And that's never been used before?
No. It had been around, I think, for about 20 years. And the provision had never been used. And so I called up Kira Toomey, who's an attorney for USDA, and said, hey, we're looking at this provision. This, you know, what do you think about this? Are you guys working on anything related to Jeff Lowe? Or there are a couple other sort of bad actors that we are discussing. And she goes, you know what? It just so happens we just suspended his license. And early next week, we're planning to file an administrative complaint to permanently revoke his license, which is exactly what they did. So on August 17th, they filed that administrative complaint.
Okay.
So usually, you know, again, his license is suspended right now. And so USDA sends inspectors out again around August 21st or so to see if he's complying with that suspension. And they get there and, you know, Jeff Lowe, I guess, thinks he's being cute or something and says, I'm going to voluntarily terminate my license. I don't need it. I'm going to move from the Wynnewood facility to a brand new facility, you know, this Tiger King Park in Thackerville. And we're not going to open for a while. I don't need my license. Basically, USDA, get off my back. If I don't have a license, then you can't come bother me, was the punchline. So he gives up his license, which then means that, you know, because he's not licensed, in theory, USDA can't inspect his property. right? Because he no longer falls within their jurisdiction.
Okay.
So this is towards the end of August, and on the side, there's this whole legal battle that we're not involved in about this Wynnewood property. But ultimately, the court in that case says, Jeff Lowe, you need to vacate this property by the end of September, beginning of October. So you need to get all the animals out of here. Mm-hmm. And so he had already planned to open up this facility in Thackerville, Oklahoma, which was, it's right next to apparently the largest casino in the country. And Jeff Lowe has a history of bringing ringtail lemurs and big cat cubs and transporting them to Vegas and to other places where, you know, people pay to interact with them. In Vegas, he would, you know, we had information that he would sneak them into suitcase, you know, put them in suitcases and sneak them into hotel rooms, you know, and people would pay to have these wild animals at parties, you know, or in their hotel rooms. So he has a history of doing this. And, so him setting up a Tiger King facility right next to a very large casino certainly makes you wonder what he was intending to do. Mm-hmm. But the property wasn't ready yet. But he really didn't have any choice because of the court order. He had to vacate. And actually, you know, Pat Craig can speak to this because Pat, at that time, Jeff Lowe did voluntarily give up some animals to Pat Craig because he simply couldn't move them in the time frame that they had.
So what kind of animals did you get from Jeff Lowe at the time?
I happened to go down there because of other legal battles that were going on about the property. And I was asked to go there in case Jeff abandoned any animals, just moved the ones he wanted to move and didn't move others. And that's more or less what happened was he was moving animals that were of value to him. And then when he got down to the last, and I don't even remember exactly how many, but it was probably 15 to 20 animals that he was just going to plan on leaving there and not taking. So thankfully I was there to intervene and help rescue those animals because, you know, again, it was only about what animals were worth anything to him.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. We're getting closer to the showdown. So take us through, Mary.
At this point, you know, I think we're talking to Pat, we're gathering information. And what we know is that, you know, Jeff Lowe is like all over social media. He's, you know, he's got his website where he's posting everything.
Right.
And we know that there's a Netflix film crew who's visiting the new property in Thackerville. And based on my discussions with USDA, we come to the conclusion that that's exhibiting to the public. The facility may not be open to the general public, but you have members of the public who are coming to the property to view and film these animals.
Right.
In addition, he's trying to make some money on the side, and they're doing these shout out videos where you pay, you can pay to have some like celebrity or person to wish you a happy birthday or send you a message or whatever. And they're showing the big cats and introducing them in the background. And then in addition, his wife, Lauren Lowe, has an OnlyFans account at this point. And for some reason, the big cats are being featured in some of her posts. And again, the OnlyFans site, you need to pay, you know, for your membership to access the site. And so we start discussing, there had never been any precedent for treating online exhibition as it had never been litigated, this issue of whether or not online exhibition is exhibition under the Animal Welfare Act. And, you know, where we decided to draw the line is if there's compensation involved. So if you have your animal and, you know, Jenny's got her dogs, she's got a Facebook account, she puts her dogs online, not exhibition under the Animal Welfare Act, right?
Right, right.
But if you are making money off of it, if there's some compensation, then that becomes exhibition.
Right.
So in our view, once you start engaging in regulated activity, you're required to comply with the law and the laws of the Animal Welfare Act. But our issue is we've never seen this new facility, right? Thackerville is a brand new facility that we've never had access to. And we have no idea what it looks like. It could be beautiful and pristine and like the most beautiful facility that you've ever seen.
Right.
Or it could be more of the same.
Right.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
And so we end up gearing up to file a complaint under the Animal Welfare Act using the serious danger provision, which had never been used before, and the Endangered Species Act as to the big cats and the ringtail lemurs. And we file this, and our theory, our hook for the Animal Welfare Act is the Netflix crews. There were other people that they were individuals that they were bringing to the property, and this online exhibition.
Right, right.
So taking the knowledge that we had about the lack of nutrition and the failure to have an attending vet, etc., we file both the complaint, and a few days before Thanksgiving or day before Thanksgiving, we file a motion for a preliminary injunction. And basically, the main thing that we are asking for is, court, give us access to this property. Let us see what's going on there and see if these animals are now being cared for.
Right.
We also asked for paperwork. Like, we want to know where all the animals are, and you know, we need to know where they are, where they're coming from, you know, who's selling them to.
Right.
And initially, Jeff Lowe, through his attorney, agrees. And he said, okay, I'm not going to fight you on this. Go ahead, come do an inspection. We agree on that. And USDA goes out and does the first inspection of the Thackerville facility. And
what date is that?
December 15th.
Okay, so that's December 15th, right?
And they even know we're coming. So there's really like no excuse for any violations, because at this point they know we're coming.
Right.
Of course, it's more of the same, and it actually in some respects it's worse, because you've got these animals who are moved from the Wynnewood facility to the Thackerville facility. They're in these small travel cages. And those cages, the animals are only meant to be in those, you know, cages for a short period of time. And yet now, several months later, because the Thackerville facility wasn't ready and he hadn't built it up, those animals are still in.
Those animals spent months in those travel cages?
Many months. Many months.
I can't even get my head around it. That's infuriating.
Yes. Yeah. And so some of them are starting to, like, they're starting to pace back and forth. They're starting to have nose rub, like they're sort of anxious and rubbing their nose against the, so they're getting sores on their noses. Also, jumping a little ahead time-wise, but these cages don't have any shelter, right? It's just the bars, because they're just meant to move them from point A to point B. And that year in Oklahoma and Texas, if you recall, was a nasty winter, and there was a terrible snowstorm that basically shut down Oklahoma and parts of Texas.
Right.
And those animals, even though tigers, you know, they're fairly hardy animals, they were completely exposed to the elements.
Right. And in the wild, Pat, how do they deal with the elements, or is that okay? Why do they need a shelter?
Well, they still need shelter when it's extreme weather. You know, even though tigers and lions and some other animals can adapt to cold, and but not extreme cold, you know, when you have ice and you have sub-zero temperatures, they have to have shelter and have to have some sort of heat source at that point. And so these were cages that had no houses whatsoever hooked to them. So they were just exposed and laying there in ice and whatever else.
And I read one of the affidavits that said they were that various tigers were housed together. Is that a bad thing to do, to house them together in a small area like that?
The key word that you just said is small, because obviously when they have a great amount of space, they can obviously separate from each other and move about based on whether they want to be social or not. But when they're in these tiny cages and numerous ones in there, they're going to end up fighting and injuring each other, which is obviously what was happening.
Uh-huh. Okay. I also read something about the concrete. Valerie, you might be able to speak to this. The concrete would damage the pads on their feet.
Yeah, animals that are continuously housed on concrete get arthritis. It's too hard of a surface, especially for heavy animals. So It's a particular concern in big cats and other big animals. There's a lot of weight on those feet. And if they're on cold, hard concrete, they're going to get severe arthritis in the feet. And also it wears down the paw pads, which can lead to really painful exposure of the tissues underneath.
So far, there's absolutely nothing that we've talked about that wasn't easily preventable.
Correct.
Okay. Let's keep going. I'm getting as mad as I did reading the affidavits and hearing the stories.
So as part of this, you know, this agreement, although our main focus was to get access to the property, we did ask for a few other things. And one key thing that we asked for was that they could not dispose of, like, euthanize any animals without consulting with us. And either we had to agree or you go to the court and the court will give you an order to euthanize an animal. That becomes important in a moment here. You know, they're at this new facility. The enclosures are small. They don't have any protection from the elements. They see, like, one of the cats is limping and sort of has an unnatural gait, but they hadn't noticed it. They hadn't gotten vet care. There was a wolf that was in poor condition, a thin lion. So again, sort of obvious things that are happening here, and they don't have a qualified attending vet. Actually, they don't have any attending vet, but qualified attending vet. Again, we have this medical records issue, missing animals. And during this time, we've also discovered by getting records from the receiving facility, if you recall Aisha, the cat that I mentioned from July. So she ends up in extremely poor condition. The last time a veterinarian in Oklahoma sees her, she's brought in and she actually has maggots on her. She can't move very well. And Jeff Lowe, in his infinite wisdom, decides to send this animal who's got multiple fractures and is in very poor condition to transport her to Tennessee. So I can't even imagine with that in her condition, how painful that ride must have been for her. That she gets to Tennessee to a facility there and is almost immediately euthanized because she's in such bad condition. And this is just, it's happening over and over again. So because, you know, there were several requirements to this agreement that we had with Jeff Lowe, and then we have these violations, we don't have an attending vet. You know, we determined that he's not going to comply. We need to go back to the court with our new information about what's going on at the new facility. So we go to file another motion for a preliminary injunction. So another request from the court to basically put some provisions in place to help protect these animals. Just before we file, though, we receive word that Jeff Lowe has sent yet another cub named Daniel. He has given the cub to a buddy of his to take to the vet and pretend that it's his cat. The tiger has metabolic bone disease again, has a fracture, and they, again, this friend pretends that the cub is his and asks for the, you know, basically has a discussion, and they decide to euthanize this cub, despite the fact that they're under a court order to confer with us. So Jeff Lowe's attorney basically tells us after the fact, hey, I'm hearing that, you know, that a cub might have been euthanized. And, but we're just about to file. So we put a, like a footnote in our motion for preliminary injunction, because we don't want to hold that up. And then we talk to the vet who euthanized the tiger, and which, when we talk to USDA, has an expert named Dr. Gage, who's an expert in big cats. And we speak with her, and in her view, after reading the documents, and we file something to this effect, the cat didn't need to be euthanized. They just didn't want to pay for the care. And again, this is due to poor nutrition. It's so easily preventable. And now we have another dead cub. So at this point, we're like, these, you know, you can't even be trusted to comply with a court order.
Right.
So on December 30th, we file a motion for a temporary restraining order. So the difference, a temporary restraining order is like the most urgent kind of order that you can request from the court. You're like, please, judge, stop what you're doing and immediately look at this issue and issue an order on it. And in this, we say, look, they cannot be trusted with cubs. We want every cub under a year, and we want their respective mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, now in front of the court is the very first Animal Welfare Act, civil Animal Welfare Act case ever brought by the United States. We're in the Eastern District of Oklahoma. So not a lot of Endangered Species Act cases are happening in the Eastern District of Oklahoma.
Right.
We're in front of a fairly new judge. I think he'd been on the bench for not even a year. And we put all this in front of the judge, and we get this really tremendous order where the judge completely agrees with us and is, you know, doesn't have any tolerance for this and for what Jeff Lowe is doing, and orders him to give up, at least temporarily, these cubs and these moms.
Mm-hmm.
And lucky for us, Pat Craig was willing to step up and help us and take those 14. We had 10 cubs and four moms, and he stepped up to go to the property.
Pat, do you ever take the cape off to have it dry cleaned, or you just keep it on 24/7?
Yeah, that's the truth. Basically, I work 7 days a week for 43 years doing this, so you don't ever get days off because of these kinds of cases that are always popping up.
Thank God you're there doing what you do, honestly.
So at the end of January, Pat and his team and some of government folks, USDA, they go to the property, and in starts, again, a paperwork issue. I get a phone call from the Jeff Lowe's attorney saying that one of the moms, so they've had to provide us, I should take a step back. One of the requirements of the order was to give us a complete and accurate inventory of animals that they have on hand.
Right.
And it has to put, you know, who the parents are, when they were born, everything.
Yeah.
Of course, I would suspect it was, you know, largely made up, but we have this document. And so we get this phone call, you know, our folks are trying, along with Pat, trying to get Jeff Lowe to comply with this court order, give up these animals per the court order. And they're arguing, well, this mom isn't this cub's mother and you can't take her.
Right.
And we're going back from like, well, who is the mother? Well, we don't know. Like, we're not leaving here with fewer than 14 cats. So this is the cat that you put on this document that you prepared for the court, like in, you know, to comply with the court order, we're taking this cat.
Right.
And so those 14 do finally make it off the property and make it to Pat Craig's facility. But we still have this issue of the completely shoddy paperwork, the, you know, the attending vet issue, and we're, you know, the DOJ attorneys are going back and forth with Jeff Lowe's attorneys, and we're just not getting anywhere. So in February, we approach the court again and we say, look, we are moving to enforce your order, judge, because there's this lack of compliance. We don't know, you know, they're telling us the paperwork that they provided us is inconsistent. They're not telling us where these animals are. Now we have, you know, potentially dozens of missing animals. And there's just a lack of compliance.
Right.
This goes on a little bit. And finally, we have a hearing, and the judge ends up threatening contempt. Like, he's, you know, he throws out the possibility that Jeff and Lauren Lowe are going to be held in contempt. And eventually they start fining them $1,000 a day until they comply and give us the paperwork that we requested. But while this is going on, PETA, the animal rights organization, has a separate side case in the Western District of Oklahoma. We're in the Eastern District, they're in the Western. And as part of that case, they are deposing and asking questions of certain employees at this facility. And during that, those conversations, during those depositions, the employee is saying, oh yeah, we're still breeding these animals, which is one of the things that per our court order, they weren't supposed to be doing. They're supposed to stop breeding the animals because they can't take care of them. Like, why are you continuing to breed if you can't even take care of the ones you have?
Right.
So we get a hold of that documentation and we're like, these, you know, they just are not capable of complying. And what are we going to do about this?
Obviously, the Lowe's had a breeding program. Were they running it responsibly, or what are the dangers of a badly run breeding program?
Yeah, good question, Chris. They were very much running a very irresponsible breeding program. First of all, there's the problem that they were using the same breeders, breeding them over and over, getting a lot of inbred animals, which, as we all know, can lead to a lot of medical problems. And in addition, they were breeding two different species that live on different continents who would never ever come in contact with each other, which causes these animals to be born guaranteed to have medical problems. The when they're breeding the Li-Ligers, which means they have a lion mom and a tiger dad, then the animals end up bigger than either a lion or a tiger. And what they're really trying to do is get these enormous animals, because in their ego-driven minds, the big animals are more powerful. And what they're really doing is creating an animal that is so big that it has chronic problems with osteoarthritis, a very much shortened lifespan. And so they absolutely were not doing it for the health and well-being of the animals.
And so this is the point where I reach out to the marshals. I have, you know, a long history and relationship working animal cases with the marshals and Jenny Crane's team. And I say, look, we've got endangered species. We've got a forfeiture provision. We're thinking about applying for a civil seizure warrant, which is not something that's done that routinely by the government.
So this whole thing's legally out of the box and you're blazing a new trail.
Right.
Okay.
So we approach them and, you know, Jenny is open to the idea, which is amazing. And, you know, we start trying to figure out how we're going to get this done. But there are so many cats at this facility. At the time, I think we were still, once we took the 14 out, we still had 68 big cats and one jaguar.
So Jenny, you get this call one day.
I have to say that this was probably one of the most random and strange. However, it came with such a attractive name to it that it was like, Mary, are you really talking about like Tiger King, Tiger King? And she confirmed that we were talking about the Netflix Tiger King. And I had to take pause. In the past, we don't usually do these type of seizures. We have seized horses. We have seized dogs that are used in fighting operations. But I can honestly say I've I've never had a conversation about taking a tiger until Mary called me that day.
And you have, working in asset forfeiture, you get a lot of money through your auctions to make victim reparations. And you also have some money for these kinds of rescue operations, yes?
Sure. What we seize and eventually liquidate goes towards the asset forfeiture fund and the operation of future seizures and then making victims whole. So we are able to participate in these Animal Welfare Act violations in this longstanding relationship that Mary and I have had on other cases. This right. was just the first time that we were looking at this type of case.
Right. Because there's not that big government pot of money that Mary can go use her ATM card to rescue 68 tigers. So how fortunate that the marshals are able to do this, yeah?
We're very fortunate. And part of it is to remove the disincentives from committing future crimes. And obviously, there were a lot of crimes being committed inside that zoo.
Mm-hmm. So Jenny goes, yeah, okay, we're in. What's the next step?
Right. So, you know, we were also having to consider one thing that I did not mention earlier is that a lot of the cats at this property and other similar properties, they're hybrids. They've crossed tigers and lions together, and then they cross their offspring together to get these, you know, ligers and these sort of hybrids of those two species.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought that they had was that those offspring are not protected by the Endangered Species Act. And
now who had that thought? The Lowe's?
Yes. Okay. And I think, you know, there was a point at which lions were not protected under the Endangered Species Act. So there was a case early on where there was a tiger lion cross and the court concluded, yeah, not protected.
Right.
But then the lions were listed and we decided to take the position. We read the statute and we decided to take the position that no, in fact, if it doesn't matter if it's first generation or, you know, subsequent generations, they're all protected because they all come from a protected lion and a protected tiger. And right. that's something that he was not banking on. But
okay.
we took that position. The judge, you know, agreed with us. And that allowed us to remove all of the big cats, or at least apply for a warrant for all of the big cats.
Okay.
So we start working on this. And the first thing that I'm doing is figuring out where are we going to put them all. Pat will take on so many animals. You can't take, that's just a lot. 68 is just a lot. So
yeah, right.
we start working with Dr. Gage, the big cat expert from USDA. And we get this list of facilities, of sanctuaries that have big cats. And we start sort of doing an assessment, internal assessment. And then I start cold calling facilities. Now, Pat and I had already spoken, but I had never talked to these other facilities.
Right.
And basically, I get on the phone and I'm like, hi, my name is Mary Hollingsworth. I'm from the U.S. Department of Justice. I have, you know, potentially an operation where I need to place some big cats. Do you guys have any space? Are you willing to help us? And right. that conversation happens, you know, a number of times with facilities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring together a team of sanctuaries, of rescues, to help us place all of these animals.
Right.
So that takes about a month to figure out. And then we loop back around with the marshals and we're trying to figure out timing. And, but what we also have going on the side is we have that testimony about them breeding cats and we know approximately how long the gestation period is. And we're like, if those cubs are born on this property, they will disappear. Like they're not going to tell us about them. They're just going to remove them from the facility and stash them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this, we're kind of running up against this.
There's a ticking clock. Mm-hmm, right.
Exactly.
Okay. Does Jeff Lowe know that he's about to lose 68 tigers?
Definitely not.
in secret, you're planning this.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. This is a really huge operation. Fish and Wildlife Service is involved, but the marshals are taking the lead on this operation. And based on some discussions we have, we realize that we need to break this up into two warrants because we are afraid of missing out on the cubs. We're afraid that the cubs are going to be born and they're going to disappear. And we're not quite ready for the big operation.
Right.
So I end up approaching USDA and Fish and Wildlife Service and beg them for agents. And they stepped up and they're like, yep, we'll get some agents together. And we decide to do a mini operation, which it's unusual for the government to go to the court asking for two warrants like right. this. And basically we're like, here's the situation. We need to go in right now to try to remove cubs and moms or pregnant cats.
Right.
And then we're going to go back again for all the rest.
Right. So this is May 6, 2021, rescue number one that is run by Fish and Wildlife. This one goes a little bit rougher.
What happens is there had been an inspection. We'd been tracking where the animals were located in the park. So when the inspectors were going there, I said, mark them down where these animals are.
Right.
And when they got there on May 6th, they had moved all of the animals. It took substantially longer to locate the animals that we
right.
wanted because we were having to match up pictures and identify cats, find them to try to locate the ones that we thought right. were pregnant.
Pat, how easy is it to recognize a tiger from a picture?
That's very difficult because especially since they dealt in cubs, you know, as those cubs grow and their hair changes and their head grows, it becomes much more difficult because of having pictures that you can rely on at multiple stages in their life.
Right. Do tigers look differently like people do, or is there a similarity that it's really, really hard to tell?
Well, yeah. I mean, first glance, everybody always says, how do you tell them apart? They're all striped, they all look the same.
Right.
But truly, they do have unique stripes for each tiger has their own.
Pattern. Is that right? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So at first glance, they almost always seem to be impossible. But when you really look at them, you could define the different stripes and patterns and know each tiger itself.
Okay.
And I'll note that as part of the previous inspections, I had asked the inspection team to take photos of every single adult, like of every single animal there.
Right.
Because we thought we might need them because I didn't want them to swap out animals and tell us they were one. And we did have Dr. Gage there who has seen a lot of big cats. And, you know, so we had her assistance to try to match up the photos of the cats that we wanted
right. okay.
that were there. But we didn't have a very large, we only had a handful of agents.
Right.
And again, it's taking longer than anticipated because they've moved all the animals around and the Lowe's become extremely verbally abusive.
Right.
Both to the agents as well as Pat's team.
At Valerie and Pat, you were there on the day. How did the Lowe's strike you in the beginning? And they didn't know you guys were going to show up. And then as the day progressed, did it get worse? Were they belligerent right off the bat?
Yeah, they were extremely upset. Very upset and yelling and screaming and walking around and trying to intervene with everybody and create more pandemonium than anything. And very verbally abusive, of course, and threatening people and doing all sorts of stuff.
I mean, they threatened to kill you.
Yeah. No, they threatened to kill us as well as officials.
And that's where we're going to leave part one of this dramatic story. Our guests went to rescue some tigers that day, and no one anticipated that someone would threaten to kill them. They pushed ahead, but they were afraid violence could erupt at any moment. We'll wrap up this rescue with part two next week. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Mary Hollingsworth, Jenny Crane, Pat Craig, Dr. Valerie Johnson, and Sean Schwerab for sharing their story. Please, please, please subscribe, write a review, give us a 5-star rating, and spread the word. We need your help. And finally, Chasing Evil is produced with the cooperation of the United States Marshals Service. It contains interviews with current and retired employees as well as other persons. Opinions, positions, and views expressed by any of them may not reflect the official views, positions, or policies of the United States Marshals Service. Stay safe, everyone.